Before we begin today's program, I'd like to announce that Michael Therion and I will be doing a six-part program series together here on Red Ice Radio, starting July 6th at 1 p.m. Pacific on vbsradio.com. During this six-part series, we'll also be having a contest, and you'll have the opportunity to win one DVD per program from Michael Therion's acclaimed DVD series, Origins and Oracles. The first person to call us live during the show with the correct answer will win, so make sure you stay tuned to Red Ice Radio and red-ice.net for more information about this series and the contest. And don't forget, our first live program is July 6th at 1 p.m. Pacific on vbsradio.com. To find out more about Michael Therion and his work, check out his website, taroscopes.com. Truth against the world. Hello, my friends, and welcome to Red Ice Radio. Thank you for tuning in to vbsradio.com, or if you are listening from the archives sometime in the future. This is Henrik Palmgren, coming to you from the west coast of Sweden. I am the editor of the website red-ice.net, and I am your host. Today we have a very special guest with us. I'm very excited about this program. Author and researcher Brad Steiger is with us. He is a titan within the field of ufology, all the things mysterious, the occult, and things commonly referred to as the paranormal. And I recently bought a copy of Brad and Sherry Steiger's latest book, Conspiracies and Secret Societies, The Complete Dossier. And it's an encyclopedia filled with interesting topics within the world of conspiracies, meaning simply the world that you and I live in, of course. But unfortunately, as things are at the moment, a world that the majority of people are unaware of, it seems. But here is where the beauty of this book comes in, because it is like a crash course into the these controversial subjects. And even more wonderful is that it simply presents the available theories without making conclusions or making suggestions on how you should interpret these theories. And I wanted to have Brad on today to talk about some of the fascinating subjects in the book, but also maybe to meander into a few other topics. I certainly want to hear more from Brad's unique perspective. I know that he has been researching these kinds of subjects for some time now, and I can only guess at how he sees the so-called research community and how it has changed over the years, and certainly with the advent of the internet. So it's going to be fascinating to hear more from Brad. So hello and welcome to the program, Mr. Steiger.
Thank you very much, and please, Henrik, just call me Brad.
Ah, okay, Brad it is. Thank you for taking the time to be here. I know you're busy in writing on another book, so I really appreciate
just coming
it.
To the very kind of the little smoothing out parts now. That's the stage it's in right now.
Great. And before we dive into some of the subjects in the book here, and I'd really like to know, just a little bit about your background. Of course, this program is, as we said, just an hour about, so we certainly don't have time to cover it all. But, how long have you been researching these kinds of subjects now?
Well, I could give the melodramatic answer and say all my life.
Ah.
Because the house in which I was reared was the, my one side of the family immigrated from Norway in the 1880s, when there was really a great Scandinavian immigration. And so the house that was built on the home place, as we call it, was my great-great-grandparents.
Yeah.
And when I was just a child, I could, it seemed like every night, this man and this woman would stand beside my bed. And I didn't recognize them. They were very stern-faced, and they were dressed. But yet, I would hide my head under the covers, and then I would come out, and they're still there. And I'd hide my head, they're still there. And finally, I decided, well, they're not going to harm me. I guess it's all right. Well, it wasn't until years later that I saw that that was my great-grandparents, Ole and Merritt, standing there. Because I found some pictures of them, and that's who it was. So I grew up in a house that had been a former stagecoach stop. So we had all kinds of phenomena there. We would get up in the middle of the night, and you'd swear, you know, that a horse and wagon had just come down the lane. We'd get up, and there's no one there. And so I became accustomed, and it took me a while because I'm a country person, and in those days when I grew up, I'm 70 years old now, so we go back, and in the 30s in the United States, where we lived, you know, it's still pretty remote, and I wasn't really exposed to other children very much until I went to school. I could speak English. Many of my cousins couldn't. And so there's quite a, you know, we identify so much with what's happening in America now.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that other children probably weren't aware and didn't see some of the things that I saw. So I can say it's all my life, but I became really, I say, for just to round it off, that I've been researching the field for 50 years because I was probably in my late teens and 20, when I was 20, that I began really seriously attending spiritualist camps, investigating mediums, and trying to understand myself what had happened in the childhood home.
Yeah.
And then I had a near-death experience at age 11. And that really, I mean, that altered my life.
Yeah,
that changed my life. I was, until that time, well, people still thought, I mean, all of my life, people thought I should be a Lutheran minister when I grew up. So I was programmed that way.
Uh-huh.
Every Sunday school program, every Christmas pageant, I was the narrator. Even when I was 9 and 10 years old, and this was all the way up to high school, but I was the narrator. And everyone thought, oh, what a fine minister he will make. Well, after my near-death experience, I said, you know, what I want to do is to prove that what the pastor is up there talking about every Sunday is real.
Exactly.
We don't have to accept it by faith alone.
Yeah.
We can research it. We can demonstrate it. We can prove it.
Yeah.
So that became my mission in life, Henrik.
Ah, wonderful. And of course, just as you say, this it seems to be almost the other way around sometimes within the Christian community that we you know that we shouldn't research these kinds of things and that we should leave it alone. And have you come up against a lot of you know resistance to the kind of work that you do?
Goodness yes. When I started, certainly. And you know, now here in the United States, and I know email that I get from abroad also indicates that there's kind of a great revival of the paranormal.
Yeah.
It's never gone away, but let's rephrase that. Not a revival, but a surge of interest right now.
Yeah.
And here in the United States, we have ghost hunting groups.
Yeah.
Frankly, every town over 500 has a ghost hunting club. And these people, God bless them, but, you know, they've read 3 books, and they've seen a special on television, so they think they're experts. They think they're ghost hunters.
Yeah.
Well, in my opinion, you know, it takes years of research and experience and discipline and discernment and learning, all of these things before you can dare say that. But when I started out, before a radio program, you were very courteous and we said kind things to each other. In those days, someone would say, Steiger, when we get on the air, I'm going to rip you to shreds. how would you like to go on the air with that introduction? I'm going to expose you as the devil worshiper you are. I'm going to expose you as the Satanist you are. I mean, but I haven't really for years, because my approach is, hey, you know, that's all right. if that's what you believe and you're comfortable and it gets you through the night, that's all that matters.
Of course.
But I'm not a missionary, but I'm just presenting some evidence, and it's up to you. I'm not a salesman. I'm not a missionary. I think I'm a teacher. I think I'm an educator. But whether you want to be in my classroom is up to you.
Well, yeah, it's beautifully said, and also that's one thing I really like about your latest book, Conspiracies and Secret Societies, that it's simply presents the some of the available theories and the different angles and approaches, and you know, as you say, it's up to the reader and the listener to make up their own mind about this, and maybe that's why some resistance to this material, because it also suggests that you have to think for yourself and to process this kind of information, and that might be dangerous in some circles also, I guess.
and a lot of people, let's be honest, Henrik, they're lazy.
Yeah.
They're intellectually lazy.
Yeah.
I mean, television is a marvelous instrument used properly, but we have just too many couch potatoes who just sit in front of it, and you don't have to think. Now, I grew up in the marvelous day of radio, theater of the mind.
Yeah.
That really engaged, and you had to think, and you had to visualize, and you had to conclude. But with the picture, there's no creative imagination. There's no creative interaction.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate your saying that about the new book, Conspiracies and Secret Societies.
Yeah.
What we tried to do there, as you so aptly said, is from the standpoint of a historian. I've been a history buff since I was a kid.
Yeah.
My grandmother was the town librarian. Grandma Dina was the town librarian. And the library was originally just made up of her private library. And she had histories of the world there that I was devouring when I was just a kid. And because they were old books, some of them, I would read the text in school and saw that they left out so much. there was so much left out.
Yeah.
And I realized part of that is a very pragmatic thing, because as history goes on, it has to be condensed.
Yeah.
But that's not the fun. That's not the thrill of it. The thrill of it is to go back to the original documents.
Yeah.
And then really see what happened. And that's what I became fascinated by when I was just 9, 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
And I remember I still remember the first day of one class when a new teacher, he had just graduated from teacher's college, and he made a statement about Rome that I raised my hand and pointed out was patently false, that there was no basis in that.
Okay.
And, of course, you can imagine how a young teacher reacted to that. And he said, well, all right, then, you do a paper on that. And I said, I'll do a paper, but it would say the same thing I'm saying, because facts are facts.
Yeah.
He made the outrageous statement that Rome was the first great democracy. That's why we in America pattern ourselves after Rome.
Yeah.
Rome was so liberated that they never owned slaves in all of Rome. All of Roman history, they never had slaves.
Oh my.
I raised my hand and said, the Roman Empire was built on the backs of slaves. with every country they conquered. They brought home slaves. They brought home slaves. I said, haven't you ever heard of Spartacus and the slave rebellion? Well, remember, Henrik, this would have been in 1949 that I'm bringing up Spartacus. So how many people had heard of Spartacus then?
Amazing.
But that's been, I guess, my passion all of my life is finding out what really happened. And, of course, this extends itself into my fascination with the paranormal.
Yeah.
With psychical research. What is really going on?
Yeah. And I like, you know, I like your calm approach to these subjects. You know, there are a lot of people out there who are, you know, quickly draw their conclusions of what it is and kind of moves on. But I guess, you know, that you maybe, you more like to meander around the subjects and try to find out, because I think I heard an interview with Jeff Renz that you did about, you know, that there always are contradictory evidence that if you dig deep enough for it, it will come to the surface, so to speak.
Yes. I was given good advice early on. First, by my father, who was a solid, if you can't see it, if you can't feel it, if you can't taste it, it doesn't exist.
Mm.
He was also a very conventionally religious person. At the same time, we had these phenomena occurring in our home, which he had to have heard them. He had to have seen them, because all the rest of the family did.
Yeah.
Now, whether he did or not, he would say, okay, what else could it have been? Now, was it really the footsteps of a ghost we just heard walking through our room? Or could have been the floorboard creaking? No, Dad, because, you know, it was the sound of footsteps, and it kept going. It didn't go creak, creak. I said, he said, okay, then, is it the wind? Is it this? Is it that? So that gave me early on, you know, to say, well, let's try to discount everything that it could or could not be. And then I had a marvelous lesson in 1950 when a Kehoe's book came out, Flying Saucers Are Real, all the way back to 1950.
Mm.
I'm reading this book, and I'm carrying it around. As I say, I'm a farm boy, so even on my chores, I have this in my back pocket so I can take it out whenever I have a minute. Well, that night, I was discussing it with my father, UFOs, and he said, he was kind of doubtful. And that night, the dreaded thing, the cattle got out in the cornfield. Now, that means you get up at 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning, whatever it is, after you've been working hard in the fields all day, and you have to run out and get the cattle corralled out of the cornfield, because they just love that corn that's just maturing. So I'm out running in the field, and I look up, and I see a UFO. Clearly, a bright UFO in the sky, and it's sweeping back and forth in the sky, sweeping back and forth over me. And I said, Dad, 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 they're real. They're here. And he said, oh, look, there's a cloud bank. That is the searchlight from the airport in Fort Dodge touching the bottom of the clouds. And I was humiliated. I was embarrassed. And then after that, Dad says, now chase the darn cattle. So I really didn't pay much attention to UFOs until I was assigned to do the book that became Strangers from the Skies in 1966, which so many people said it. I just had a reviewer say the other day it was the first book he had read as a student in school that wasn't a signed book. He has the first book, 1966, and it had the good fortune, Henrik, to come out at the same time that J. Allen Hynek in Michigan was saying, UFOs are all swamp gas. Now, he didn't really say that. So he was quoted, and the book got on the bestseller list in 2 weeks.
Oh,
now, in the doing the research for the book, I discovered to my satisfaction that UFOs were far more than the reflection of searchlights
yeah.
on the underbelly of clouds.
Yeah,
I went into it with an open mind. See, I had decided no more UFOs for me. I'm sticking to psychical research.
Yeah.
I'm sticking to mediumship. I'm sticking to examining spiritualism and how it interacts, the phenomena of the seance room.
Yeah.
I thought I'd focus on parapsychology, ESP, psychic phenomena, and then I got pulled back into UFOs, and I've now written or co-written 22 books on UFOs.
Oh, my.
And, you know, again, just endlessly fascinating, and I still can't be the least bit dogmatic about what they are. If you go to my website, as you have undoubtedly done,
yeah.
you will see that I have 17 theories, 17 theories of what UFOs may be.
Okay, do you want to go through a few of them for our listeners?
Well, we can as we progress. I know you want to cover so much more. But
yeah.
let me, I love stories that come full circle. So let me quickly say, my father, I don't know when you have to break for commercials.
No, we don't. So we have the full hours.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead, of course.
We're not in America now.
No.
Usually I don't get to talk this long.
Oh,
without being interrupted.
Might be a new experience then, maybe.
yes.
Great.
Well, you might be sorry. You get me started here.
No. Go ahead, please. It's great.
Okay, well, I just have to complete this.
Yeah, movie.
Okay,
of
my
course.
My father, okay, I'm what am I? I'm 14 or 15.
Yeah.
And, of course, UFOs, and then we see, you know, the searchlights in the airport. Now, it is now many years later, I have written probably five or six or so books on UFOs. And I get a call from a farmer living in a certain part of the state saying that the UFOs come there every night with such regularity that he can set his watch by it.
Hmm.
I wanted to go and set my watch too, right? So I called Dad and I said, "You want to come along?" Now, again, this was quite a bit of driving, and I had to swing down and pick up, because I'm obviously now I'm teaching in college. I'm no longer living on the farm.
Yeah.
And so I go by and pick him up, and Henrik, it was as the farmer said. Now, we had a judge there. We had several highway patrol members. We had a number of attorneys in town and so forth who had come out, and there... It was interesting because we saw a light coming off in the sky. And people said, "Is that it? Is that it?"
Hmm.
The farmer said, "No, that's the mail plane." And yes, we could see a light, and then the light got bigger, and then we could hear the sound of the engine, and then the engine got louder, and then, you know, went down in volume as it went over. It's the way we're used to seeing things come and go, right?
Yeah.
When the UFOs came, they were just there. There. We didn't see them come. They were just there.
Hmm.
Then, and there were two of them. They touched, and then they took off at an incredible rate of speed, each in a different direction. And then, I don't know if they circled the planet or not, because the farmer said, "Okay, now in exactly 4 minutes and 10 seconds, they'll be back." He's timing all this.
Yeah.
And in 4 minutes and 10 seconds, they were back.
Mm.
And then they took off, straight up. My father has binoculars for all of this. And he is practically giving himself black eyes because he is seeing this. He is witnessing this for himself.
Yeah.
He sat very quietly on the way home, and then he said to me, "You know, I guess I always did believe in UFOs."
Oh, great.
I just love it.
Yeah.
You know, when things come full circle.
Absolutely. You know, I'm looking at your... I pulled up here from Rens.com your 17 theories of the UFO enigma, and you know, is there any one of these that you at this point, you know, favor? Is there any theory that you kind of lean towards, or do you find them all valid, so to speak?
I think they are all in very much their own way valid. I began, as most of us do, with the nuts and bolts theories. These were craft coming from extraterrestrial worlds. Now, I have pretty much come to the conclusion that I'm not denying there's life on other worlds,
yeah,
other dimensions, probably other universes. But I think at least 95% of what we witness and call UFO is indigenous to this planet.
Yeah.
That is a phenomenon that interacts with us as Homo sapiens, and maybe created us as Homo sapiens.
Mm.
Maybe they're the angels.
Yeah.
Maybe the angels created us. Maybe when we speak of fallen angels, those were just to the primitive people of the time, they were just beings that came from the sky or came from above or came from other dimensions.
Yeah.
Another universe could have such an superior intelligence that they're going around seeding other universes.
Yeah.
And I'm more at that. I mean, or I will say that in the beginning, this may be an extraterrestrial phenomenon, but it has been here so long that it's become a part of our indigenous planetary makeup.
Yeah.
Now, I think, as hard a pill as it is for some researchers to swallow, and I think this is what we have a great deal of, Henrik, in conspiracies and secret societies.
Yeah.
We have to recognize that a good many of the early, I'm talking about 1947, 1950,
yes,
a good many of those sightings were military secrets,
yeah,
were U.S. military. And I was on, doesn't matter, but an interview show maybe a month or so ago, and someone asked me about, what about the ghost ships in Scandinavia right after,
yeah,
World War II?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I remember, and this person obviously did too, and I said that was an extension of extraterrestrial activity at the time. Now I'm seeing that more as military secret.
Mm.
I think, well, we know Operation Paperclip,
yeah,
at the end of World War II. The U.S., they were bringing Nazi scientists and their families to the United States when the smoke hadn't even cleared from World War II.
Yeah.
And, of course, Operation Paperclip, I know you're aware, but for some people who may not be, the scientists and their family on their passports, on their papers, on their documents, theirs was distinct from other immigrants in that theirs had a paperclip on it.
Yeah.
And then the people in charge would recognize that, oh, these are people are to pass through without examination.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the other people who were immigrating had to declare they were not members of the Nazi Party. They'd never been members of the Nazi Party.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there wasn't one scientist who could declare that, because unless he had taken an oath, he wouldn't have been able to be in that key position.
Yeah.
In their jet propulsion. So I think many of the things that we saw in the skies immediately after World War II, that was a whole group of Nazi scientists jump-starting our space program, jump-starting our missile program.
Yeah, and of course, you know, this ties into, you know, the previous era that the Nazis, because they had to get the if they were the ones who brought it to America, and I guess even some Nazis even went to Russia. Soviet. But you know, this technology had to come from somewhere, and of course there are many stories about the Nazis, had encountered another race. These also connects with the theories of the Hollow Earth and all these kinds of stuff, which you of course bring up in your book also. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I am totally fascinated by this aspect.
Yeah.
And I am so amazed that we never see this in the history books. But we have to recognize that the whole activation of Nazism is based on occult tradition.
Yeah.
Thule Society, Vril Society, the Black Sun.
Yeah.
All of those groups, they believed that they were in contact with aliens.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why it's so hard to put that in the history books. We have brilliant histories of World War II,
yeah,
and they seem to just completely ignore the occult connection.
They do.
Now, I think it was History Channel here in the U.S. that does have an excellent, I think they did a three-part on Nazis and the occult, and that's about the only thing, the only place I've seen this.
Yeah.
But, you know, to ignore the impact, of Edward Buter Lytton's book, or novel, The Coming Race,
yes.
And connecting that with the whole theory of the Hyperboreans under the Earth, and then the mediums, or we would call them channelers today,
yeah,
who were sitting there making contact with aliens who were allegedly giving them the information of how to build these spacecraft.
Yeah.
And this is all, this is not conjecture, this is not science fiction, this is fact.
Exactly.
That secret societies created Nazism.
Yeah.
Hitler was a member of these secret societies.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, who would believe, even today, because I'm sorry, and I'm not condemning all, and I'm not making an allness statement, because I'm kind of strict with my semantics, so I never say everybody, but a good many of the present day channelers are very arrogant. They know nothing of the history. They know nothing that in the 1860s channelers were claiming they were talking to 80s.
Yeah.
The aliens.
Yeah.
they think they just came up with it after they read Shirley MacLaine's book, after they went to see Ramtha.
Yeah.
Then they think, oh well, I can do that too.
Yeah.
But this did not begin in the 70s. We know both in Scandinavia. You've always had a strong tradition there of I know from my own Swedenborgian grandparents, that this has been a tradition, to believe that there is another dimension, that we can contact another dimension. But who will accept that in 1921 we have Maria Orstik sitting there channeling from the Aryan or the Elohim, or the Elder Race, how they are to create these spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's tradition, and we can only present it as theory, that the Nazi scientists did get either a crashed UFO or the aliens themselves came and made a deal with the Nazi scientists.
Yeah.
We do know that Hitler, and this is the whole thing with the master race, he wanted when the coming race that Bühler Lytton writes about, when they presented themselves, he wanted to be certain that the whole saga that we see in Nordic tradition, that the German people were now, they were Odin, they were Thor, they had carried on the Nordic tradition, they were the master race, they were now fit to breed, to intermate with the master race, the supermen from the Hollow Earth.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, this just blows traditional history apart.
It does. It sure does.
I mean, this is what that nutcase, Hitler, was trying to do.
Yeah.
Is to create the German, which is why, again, he made overtures to the Scandinavians.
Yeah.
You know, and of course we know there was, you know, a Viking, there were some Scandinavians who bought into that.
Yeah.
So they had the various Viking groups that came with the Nazis, but we know that overwhelmingly the Scandinavian people say, Adolf, you don't have it together. You know, this is nuts. This is crazy.
Yeah.
But this is what he was doing. He was building up so that the Germans would be the master race.
Yeah, of course. And you know, this is, and just as you say, an old story. It goes back to, you know, even before, I guess, Helena Blavatsky brought it up through theosophy, and which connects with Rudolf Steiner, and she of course talked about the Aryans also. But this might be a difficult question to answer. But could it be possible that, you know, through the actions of the thing that happened there in Germany and with Hitler and the Nazi party to, you know, kind of put the lid on this box forever with a maneuver like this, because, you know, now of course we are not allowed to even research this stuff, because, you know, these were the kinds of crazy ideas that led up to Hitler and I mean, could it be such a grand conspiracy, so to speak, to try to just debunk all of this and for once and for all lay this aside?
Well, I will make the argument that the benevolent beings are the one who direct certain of us to continually call attention to this misinterpretation of these messages that are more ancient than we are, because we know inside of every one of us is a Hitler and is a Gandhi. Inside every one of us there is a Jesus and there is a Satan.
Yeah.
And the challenge here on Earth is always balance, discernment, balance. That's what we've come here to learn.
Yeah.
So I think the example of how, whenever you, and you means all of us, whenever we ignore the basics and we become greed, we emphasize self over others, we emphasize, but that's sin, and I don't like to use that word.
Yeah.
But in this classic sense that you will hear it being used, to me, there is only one. Everything stems from that, and that's greed.
Yeah.
Whenever we think of putting ourselves, our concerns, before others, the basic golden rule, which is in every philosophy, that is what we are to learn. And the minute we begin to distort it with a power trip, or thinking that we ourselves and our little coterie, those who agree with us and everyone who disagrees with us is evil, everyone who disagrees with us is going to go to hell, We are the special. We are the elite. We are the chosen. That is what we are to learn. And there are some of us who will keep bringing this up so we don't forget that lesson.
Yeah.
We are all. We all have the cosmic heritage that has been given to us. We can all be so much more than we believe and that people tell us to be. We do not have to be limited by what others declare as our physical limitation. We know that there is this force that interconnects us all. And when I say that, people start to chuckle and say, oh, are you talking Star Wars? Mm. And I'm saying, no, this is probably the basic law that was taught to the most ancient of Egyptian mystery schools.
Yeah.
But remember, George Lucas was lying there as a young man, battered from a terrible accident, and had this vision of a force that connects. He just got the same message that so many of us do, that there is this force that connects us all, and that we are just, we are all, every cell, every living cell of everything is interconnected. We're all one. In the minute we have the perversion to say that we are so unique and we are so special that other people don't count and my needs come first, this is what we have to keep warning about.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally agree with you, of course. And, you know, all these different subjects, you know, as we said in the beginning, there is a rise in the interest in the so-called paranormal subjects. And, you know, I've been doing my site, I guess, for about 2 or 3 years now, the way that I do it now with and so forth. But to me, it seems that, you know, more and more subjects are kind of merging together, you know, that we... just now when we have this conversation, we can easily meander over, you know, ghosts, over to UFOs, over to secret societies, and all of these kind of things seem to connect.
Because it's all one.
Yeah, and it's all one, exactly. And you know, is this something that you have seen coming in the recent years, or have you always seen that this was the case, that all these subjects kind of connect?
Well, when I had my near-death experience, and it's, you know, it's an ineffable kind of experience.
Yeah.
And you know, I have to say this or people will misunderstand. I was shown the oneness. I was shown the ineffability of all things. It was like, now I'm not saying I was able to bring this back, Henrik.
Yeah.
But I know that I saw. I know that I saw that history has a meaning, history has a purpose.
Yeah.
There is a plan. There is a divine plan. And we are all part of it. And the way this was conveyed to me was by seeing a series of incredible geometric shapes that were pulsating and actually seemed to be alive. And even though the shapes, just geometric, they somehow were giving me intelligence, that they were somehow showing me things that I know I couldn't possibly remember, but maybe, I mean, I was 11 years old, but maybe a little at a time I've been remembering, a little at a time I've been recalling.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying, you see, that I have the answers. I had in that moment in between time and space, that moment of ecstasy and ineffability, I saw. But and I've talked to others who had the experience, but you can't bring it back. You try to say, I know it's there, and what did I really see? And it doesn't come back, but maybe just a little bit at a time through dreams and visions, and especially when I'm sitting writing. You know, I'm sure the same is true with you, Henrik. You kind of go into a little altered state of consciousness when you're writing.
Absolutely.
I think every creative person does, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly do. And, you know, that's very interesting to hear, actually, because Do you think that this was the ultimate version of reality, so to speak, that you saw a glimpse of, and the world that we live in now is kind of, you know, it's the fractal holographic illusion of that source.
You know, Henrik, that proved right there the point I'm making. You just said it, because I had no idea what I had seen, or I hadn't seen anything like it until Sherry began researching fractal geometry.
Mm.
That's the closest I can say to what I saw.
Oh, interesting.
She began to use slides. She wrote to the scientists who were working with fractal geometry, and this was years ago. They were just beginning to work. And they were kind enough to send her some slides. And she had this intuitive that she should show these during her healing workshops.
Hmm.
And it was astonishing, Henry. People who, I mean, that they were, you know, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, faith healing revival.
But people
were receiving healings.
Course.
People were, because she did a combination of showing fractal geometric slides with a combination of certain music and certain sounds all at once, and people were being healed. And the first time, because she'd been working on it, you know, she has her own office, and of course, and she was working, so I hadn't seen this, I hadn't seen the presentation, and I was there, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. And afterwards I said, honey, that's the closest I have seen to what I saw in that in-between. I call it, I went to the in-between universe.
Oh.
The in-between universe. And so that is exactly what I have concluded, that is reality, maybe as it appears to some level of intelligence.
Yeah.
Then we bring it back, you know, just like Plato's analogy of the cave, we bring it back then to this three-dimensional world, and it has different form, it has a different shape, but that isn't what the original idea of it, as Plato spoke of, the nua, that is not the original idea, but we bring it down to this reality. So here again, we get back to UFOs.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we see them as glowing lights in the sky primarily. We see spirits as glowing lights in rooms, but that may be simply the vehicle which these intelligences use to transport themselves.
Yeah. And do you think that it is, you know, it's kind of a special time right now, or the years ahead? I mean, it seems like there's this kind of information is popping up all over the place at this moment. And, of course, I guess that the question I'm asking is, I guess you've heard of the, you know, the infamous 2012 year and all this. And,
right.
And I'm sorry, but I have to, you know.
Well, of course you do. We have to confront that.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine you get as many emails every day about 2012 as I do.
I can imagine that you get quite a few more than I do. So, you know, do you have any take on it? Do you know what it is? What does it mean to you?
First of all, we take a deep breath, and then we say, as historians, as journalists, we know that toward the last decade of every century, there is a feeling that this is the end time.
Yeah.
This is it. And then at the beginning of every century, it's, okay, something is about to happen. Something, a new world is about to be born.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's then, first of all, as being as objective as we can, we recognize that. Then we put together in our little mental computers everything that seems to be happening now, everything that seems to be escalating. And we come to this very uneasy feeling as we see polar bears beginning to cannibalize themselves.
Yeah.
As we see the glaciers melting, as we see all of these things transforming, that we are quite likely facing some new challenges, and that there is a truth, maybe not the truth, but there is a truth to this cycle that we're facing. Now, here again, I tend to look at everything as cyclical.
Yeah.
For a long time, I thought global warming was simply part of a cycle, and that humans really had nothing to do with it, that gas house emissions and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just coincident.
Yeah.
Now I think one has to be incredibly aloof not to recognize that the human factor is playing a role.
Yeah.
I still think it's primarily cyclical, but we've accelerated it by our sometimes very obnoxious presence. We have accelerated what's happening.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to face that. We are going to have to face that reality. Now, again, some people say deliverance. This is when Jesus is going to come in the clouds. There's going to be all those white horses. There's going to be the big Armageddon.
Yeah.
And the devil and Jesus are going to square off on the plains of Megiddo.
Yeah.
Well, or then other people say the Space Brothers. Now they've been waiting for a time, and they're going to come and they're going to deliver us.
Yeah.
I think here again, the angels, and I believe very much in angels, and we just finished a massive book with about a broad interpretation of what an angel is, as you will find.
Mm, interesting.
Because we cover all, well, I mean, there again, excuse me, we cover as many aspects as our human minds could think of,
yeah.
of what angels are and how they've interacted. I don't think these dimensions, they are paraphysical beings. They become physical for a time, but I don't think, whether you want to call it the Star Trek dictative, or whatever it is, I think they can only teach by example. They can only teach by showing. They can only inspire us. But we have to work out our own solutions. We have to solve our own problems.
Yeah.
Now, 2012, then in my interpretation, is not the end of the world, but it's the end of an age. An old world is dying, and a new world is being born. That's our cycles.
Yeah. And I mean, how do we help to create this new world? I mean, is this the I guess this also is the confusion between, you know, the conspiratorial view of a new world order and a new world, I guess.
Right.
And I mean, how do we keep these two apart? Or do we want to? What's your take on that?
That's an excellent question. You know, when way back in my Sunday school days, we were all talking, we were all singing, a new age is coming, a new age is coming. Then in the 60s and 70s, when the people who were talking about a new age were suddenly looked on with scorn, with ridicule, even hatred,
yeah.
New agers. And I still hear fulmination from the pulpits about the new agers. As if this is some incredible threat. This is some insidious, rebellious element in our society. Well, the recent survey, a census of population, I think there were less than 100,000 people who said that they were a part of a New Age religion. But we still speak of a certain awareness as being New Age. Now, presidents have spoken of a new world order coming.
Yeah.
Every time they take office, a new administration takes office.
Yeah.
It was only recently then that kind of the insidious new world order, which may be synonymous with the Illuminati,
yeah.
has come into being. Now, we in terms of a people, we didn't really think of international plots, international conspiracies. There's always been conspiracies.
Yeah.
But we didn't put them on an international level until the time of the French Revolution, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I ask myself why. Why did the Jacobites, the Jacobins, why did people say, well, I think the Illuminati was part of it? Mm-hmm. Now, we know that the Bavarian Illuminati began about the same time.
Yeah.
And then we know that the regents in Bavaria said, we're not going to have you crazy intellectuals running around talking about this Illuminati any longer. It's over. And that, as far as we know, is the end, historically, of the Illuminati.
Yeah.
But then the French Revolution comes and people say, I think the Bavarian Illuminati had something to do with it. And then the book is written, and it's gone ever since.
Yeah.
Now, we have to acknowledge that there is also the Illuminati that began before the Bavarian Illuminati that was used for a secret society in Spain.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we seem to have, and this is, I guess, what I want to say if I have a few minutes to wrap it up.
We have just about 1 minute, so please wrap it up if you can.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Let us say then that what we're trying to show in our book is that this is the mirror of humankind, of human history. We look into the mirror and we see what we believe are our features, very well organized and structured, familiar, and then behind us we see shadowy figures.
Yeah.
And when you really begin to research, you do get the feeling, New World Order, Illuminati, they call them what they will,
yeah,
there are shadowy figures, there are secret governments, there are black ops that really are in behind the scenes pulling the strings.
There are. Brad, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Yeah, we
let's
have
do
to
do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again. Absolutely. It would have been great. So, you know, everyone listening out there, do visit Brad and Sherry's site, which, of course, is bradandsherry.com, and check out the book Conspiracies and Secret Societies. And we will continue next week. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.